I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome to this week's Fail Critics podcast. I'm your host, Tony Black, stepping in for Steve Norman, who's right now in the toilet. He might be a while. He's having quite a delayed visit.
I think he's stuck in the chemical toilet on a National Express bus.
Yes, yeah.
Couldn't be here.
Couldn't be here with us.
Or a Southern Rail train.
Because we're in a pub again, and we're doing another live Fail Critics podcast. So with me is Owen Hughes.
Hello.
And Andrew Brooker.
You all right, guys?
And we're in the Mitre in Oxford.
We've moved from Birmingham to Oxford.
Yeah.
Is that going upper class now? Or is
I
that...
think so.
Yeah. Birmingham's getting quite trendy, though.
But, you know, Britain First are up there.
Trendy with a small T.
We were going to join the Britain First rally.
Yeah.
But Brooker wouldn't let us.
No. They're not quite right, white supremacist enough for us, are they?
No,
so, you know, we were like, nah. No,
can't be doing with them.
That is, of course, a joke.
Or is it?
Or is it? Yeah. Well, yes.
No,
it is definitely a joke. So, yeah, while we wait for Steve to come back, you know, get here on his National Express bus, we might as well carry on and do the podcast. So,
let's do it.
This week we're going to do some... What we've been watching a bit later, and some recommendations, and a triple bill. But before that, we're going to talk about some news, aren't we? But given we're recording this a week before, we've decided that we're going to do a bit of a spin on this, okay? And, you know, fake news is all in the rage these days, what with Herr Trump and his regime.
Wispy pubic hair.
We're going to do some fake news. So, gents, what do we think is going to be happening in the world over the next week?
We have to think of a good obituary, really, don't we?
A good obituary.
That's dark.
This is the problem with recording live in a pub with just one microphone on a table.
Yeah.
Is that we haven't got our laptops in front of each
other? No, we can't immediately look up all the fake news that is exactly there every week, normally.
We have to check if we've got 4G signal.
Well, yeah.
The cloud.
I haven't even got fucking 4G, so...
Oh, God.
You have to take my word for it.
I'm just going to have to imagine it, aren't I?
Yeah.
Fun fact, did you know that the Bodyguard 2 was originally supposed to star Princess Diana?
Really?
Yeah.
Is that fake news?
No, that's true.
Does
that have a punchline? Because it sounds like a shit.
Apparently, they wanted Princess Diana to be in it. Whether she was... not playing herself either. Playing somebody else. She'd never acted before, but then it would probably end up be better than the name of Naomi Watts Diana, wouldn't it? To be fair.
Well,
yeah.
It sounds like somebody... Is this a conspiracy where someone really didn't want to see the Bodyguard 2? I'm not having that on my watch.
Well, it is now. It is now. Now you've put it out there. Brooker, what's your fake news anyway for next week? What do you think is going to happen?
I think Justin Timberlake is going to announce that he's signed on as Iron Man. Robert Downey Jr. got pissed at the amount of abuse that he got over his head being bigger than anybody else's on the Spider-Man poster.
Yeah.
It's clear. Only for Justin Timberlake to take over.
Why JT?
Because that was the funniest name I could think of off the top of my head.
Yeah.
Does this mean that it's going to be partly a musical, Avengers 4?
Maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe, or it's just going to have really catchy, shitty songs in the soundtrack. Like Trolls.
Yeah.
Has Justin Timberlake ever been good in a film?
Social Network?
Yeah, he was all right
in
the Social
Network.
Has he
ever been good in a film?
It wasn't any good in In Time. In Time was pretty bad.
I liked In Time.
Did you?
Yeah.
Oh, no, I couldn't be dealing with it.
The help that Manchin was in it, I've forgotten
her Manchin?
She's got proper man jaw.
Manchin.
She was in House. She played number 13.
His mum?
House. Olivia Wilde.
His mum was Olivia... Really?
Yep.
I've forgotten that film completely, so I don't remember. How can she be his mum in it?
Well, the whole point is you don't age. You just run out of time.
Wow,
so,
okay.
You can all you stop aging at a certain point, and now you just have a timer on your arm instead.
A bit like a shit Logan's Run, wasn't it?
It was a very shit Logan's Run.
Yeah.
But I kind of liked In Time. It was silly fun. I liked the guy I'm not going to look it up. Because but the guy that gives Justin Timberlake all the time, I really quite like him. So he's the guy from White Collar.
Matthew Bomer.
That's the one.
Yeah. Cool. Okay. Well, we'll see if that happens then. Mine.
Yeah.
Is that the Transformers 6 is going to be announced, and it's going to star Barry from EastEnders.
Oh. Now, I am all over that.
Now the main reason I say this is because we're in Oxford, and currently Barry is starring in Ray Cooney's Out of Order.
Yes.
Right.
That's Ray Cooney. Run for your wife.
Run for your. Oh God, which is just terrible. What is his real name? Because I'm like I extras no where I just call him Barry from EastEnders.
Not a clue.
No. Anyway, him. As it's no more ludicrous than Sir Anthony Hopkins being very Welsh on Transformers 5. A film you loved, Brooker, didn't you?
No. No. And Anthony Hopkins being in it just made it worse. It was worse than stunt casting. It was because he was trying so hard to be good and wasn't. It was awful.
Tragic, really, yeah. Given he's just come off Westworld, which was brilliant, and he was great in that, and then he's like gone on to Transformers 5.
Part of that was filmed here, wasn't it? Transformers 5, here in Oxford, where we are.
Was it?
Mm.
Really?
Yeah.
So we've got you guys to blame for Transformers
5. I'm afraid 5. So.
Was it filmed in the Mitre, where we are?
I believe this exact location, this booth, is where Bumblebee slaps Shia LaBeouf around the... He's not in this one, though, is he?
No, Shia LaBeouf isn't in this one.
He might as well be. I mean, yeah. Who cares? When did Shia LaBeouf go out of it? Was it the third one?
Third was his last one, eh?
Was third his last one? Yes.
Because he wasn't in four. That was when Wahlberg, Marky Mark.
Yes, yeah. One and two was Megan Fox. Megan Fox got fired after two. But he was in it with blonde chick.
Rosie Huntington upskirtly.
That's the one.
Who you first see when he's pointing the camera at her ass as she walks up a staircase. Yeah.
It's a Michael Bay film.
Yeah.
Expect.
Yeah, exactly. Anyway, I think
not good podcasting.
What are you talking about? This is great news. I think Barry from EastEnders is going to be much better than Marky Mark or Shia LaBeouf. Absolutely. I will go and see Transformers 6.
For Marky... For Barry.
You can review that one. I'm not watching another Transformers film.
Let's start off with you, Brooker. What have you been watching this week?
So I watched a film that... almost made it onto my list for our triple bill, but I decided against it. Mainly...
Well, have we said what the triple bill is yet?
No.
Oh, sorry, it's because I'm not Steve, you see. I'm not as good at this. Go on, Owen, what's the triple bill?
It's getting the band back together. We are basically, the three of us, getting back together after our live recorded episode. Recorded in the old Contemptibles in Birmingham.
The old Contemptibles, yeah.
So we're getting back together. We thought we'd pick a triple bill of films based around a similar theme, which Steve came up with before
he decided he couldn't make it.
Before he decided...
Ah, well, he might still arrive. Remember, he is still stuck in that toilet on the M26.
I believe they've actually arrived...
Is that
arrived
even a motorway? I don't think it is, No.
they've arrived in Oxford. Steve just can't get out of the toilet.
Yeah. Yeah.
The last text I had from him is they're on the way back down to Swanage.
Got one of them awful doors that opens into where you are, so now he kind of can't open it and squeeze around it.
This is a bit like when Roger Moore was on his way to Alan Partridge in Knowing Me, Knowing You, wasn't it? Roger Moore is at Heston Services. He's on his way.
Hello, I'm Roger Moore.
Roger Moore. He's a towel thief. But yes.
So my film almost made it onto my list for... the triple bill, but the only reason it didn't was because I couldn't find time or anything to watch beforehand, and it was the most recent film I watched. And that film was The Usual Suspects.
Oh, classic.
Quality.
For a couple of reasons, actually, but the main one was a couple of weeks ago, as I walked out of my job, I emailed all staff at all the schools I worked for just a picture of Kaiser Soze. Literally saying, and like that, he's gone.
Brilliant.
Oh, man, you spoiled Usual Suspects for everybody.
I have. It is a 22-year-old film. If you haven't seen The Usual Suspects yet, I am very sorry that I may have spoiled it for you.
You haven't.
Careless.
You haven't fully.
Mainly because you weren't on my all-staff list at work.
Yeah. That's a pretty good mic drop, though, as you leave a job, I think. That's pretty good.
I made quite a big deal of not wanting to do anything. I just wanted to leave because it was a cunt hole and I just wanted to go. So that was the email that me saying goodbye to everyone was just that. And I kind of...
That would have been great. I mean, what other spoilers could you have dropped into that email just to piss everyone off?
You could have told everyone you were a ghost.
Yeah.
That would have been good.
Just, by the way... Oh boy, this is.
Oh no, not that one. That one is wrong.
That would have spoiled.
That really would have. Yeah, that would have been good.
Yeah. So that was my my leaving thing for work. So, and since then, I've kind of fancied watching it and been putting it off and putting it off. So trying to find some time to watch it with a wife and didn't have time. So, you know what? Bollocks. So yesterday afternoon, I just stuck it on so I couldn't decide what to watch, and I just watched a really terrible film that needed erasing from my memory. So I watched Usual Suspects, and what was it, 95? Might be 94?
95, I think.
Yeah. Brian Singer film, so before he started doing X-Men movies.
Yeah, for better or worse.
Written by Christopher McQuarrie.
You can get away with this because there's a Q in Macquarie.
Yeah.
So you're like,
it's a long name.
That's his full name. That's what it says on Wikipedia.
Yeah.
Depends on how much you can.
Is that after you've edited it?
Yes.
Yeah.
Of course, Macquarie's recently done Jack Reacher, he's done Mission Impossible, so he's got a bit of a name for himself as well. But basically, you know, for those who haven't seen it, anyone who's left that hasn't seen it, is it's a group of five criminals that are brought together by a mysterious Uber criminal,
Mr. Kobayashi.
Yeah, to do a heist for them, and this is why it was going to end up in the triple bill, because it turns out that the five of them are brought into their interrogation thing, their lineup, on purpose by Kobayashi and Kaiser Soze to get them all together in a room so they can talk to them and get this job organised. Yep. So, I mean, I assume you guys have both seen...
Yeah.
Well, I was going to say, I've seen it once because I'm told not to watch it again.
Really?
Who told you that?
I can't remember.
Oh, no,
basically, because once you know it, I've heard that actually on the rewatch, it diminishes.
It doesn't lose anything.
No, I don't think it does. I encourage you to watch it again.
I've been misinformed.
Fake news.
Right.
Fake news.
But did
sad. Yeah,
did
sad.
You know the little tidbit about the lineup when you first watched it?
Mm-mm.
Do you know the little tidbit about the lineup now? The lineup.
I'll cover the mic.
No, it's not a spoiler.
Okay.
Not in the slightest. The lineup at the beginning of The Usual Suspects, when you got all the guys, you got Kevin Spacey, Benicio del Toro, Gabriel Byrne, Stephen Baldwin. It's not Dan Hedaya, it's the other guy.
Oh,
doesn't matter.
Kevin Summin?
Yeah.
Kevin Dillon, I want to say, am I right?
Maybe.
No.
Anyways, the five of them.
Yeah.
When they're in that lineup, and they start. It's all ad-libbed.
Oh, really?
The whole thing.
Really?
It was scripted,
yeah.
And they had a script to follow, and all they did was keep dicking around while they were doing it. So when they start laughing at each other during the lineup, it's because they were fucking around on camera.
Nice.
The whole thing is completely unscripted.
Wow.
It is a giant outtake that made it into one of the best thrillers ever made.
I didn't know that.
Kevin Pollak.
Yeah,
he's close.
Well, he could have been the ultimate haddock.
Which was on the menu, wasn't it? The dinner we've just eaten.
You could either have Pollock, Kevin Pollock,
or Ultimate Haddock. Ultimate Haddock.
Yeah. Now that's a wrestling tag team.
That's one for the bringing the band back together. Like, it's a great film though. Fair play.
Oh, it's an amazing
film.
It's
really cleverly done.
And every time I watch it, I forget just how good it actually is.
Yeah.
And it is, because there's no big special effects. There's no CGI. It's all talking. It's all exposition. So it never dates.
No.
Really, never gets dated. Pete Postlethwaite was in it. He's one of the biggest guys in it.
Yeah.
And forget, and then you go, he's dead.
Mm. Sad.
Oh, no. That's really sad.
Sad.
But yeah, that was my what we've been watching.
Cool.
Usual Suspects.
Awesome. Owen.
Yeah.
What about you?
Okay. I watched a screener for a film that's coming out soon, probably within a week of this podcast.
Let's hope so, because that'll time nicely, won't it?
Exactly. That's why I've kept it. It's called Origin Wars.
Oh God.
Right. Yes. I've heard of this.
Okay.
Because I don't know the story, but I know it's a terrible title, isn't it?
It's awful, isn't it?
What does it mean?
It's so bad. Well, it's got an alternative name.
Is it the Ultimate Haddock?
It's not the Ultimate. It's called The Osiris Child Science Fiction Volume 1. Which is almost as bad.
That's worse.
What on earth? This is Egyptian mythology?
No.
Why?
It's
Osiris.
Yeah. It's not. It's also, if you watch the credits for the film, it has another title on there, which is Origin Wars Volume 1, which kind of is a little bit better.
They're also being a bit presumptuous, aren't they? They're going to make Volume 2, 3, 4, whatever.
Yeah, but it's been distributed by Lionsgate.
Right.
I'm not sure of the exact budget. I couldn't find that on the press releases or online.
Yeah.
but it looks kind of okay. The reason I was tempted to give it a go is because it's a sci-fi film,
yeah,
which is actually quite kind of good looking. I kind of expected the story to be a bit ropey, but I thought it would look good anyway. So Origin Wars. Origin, don't know why they went with Origin. The fucking worst word you could attach to a franchise at the moment is Origin.
Yeah, yeah.
People are turned off by
Origin stories.
Origin stories, but they went Origin. And then Wars, because I'm guessing they're tied into Star Wars.
Are there any wars in it, though?
There's a skirmish.
Are there any origins in it?
It's kind of a... Origin skirmish doesn't trip off the tongue,
does
it?
It's the origin of this... planet story.
So planet skirmish is what it should have been called.
Yeah, it basically it should have continued.
Sounds like a shit steam green light game.
I don't know why it's called the Osiris Child either. Don't know what else.
Is there a character called Osiris in it?
No. Nope.
Is there a child in it?
There's a child.
Is it called Osiris?
No. No. Okay. One of the things I've got written down here in my notes. Okay. I saw a 4-star review, which was on the sort of bump
right.
Came around.
Yeah,
the,
yeah.
The screen.
Out of 5 or out of 10?
That's a good quote. I assumed it was out of 5. It could have been out of 10.
Yeah, that's true, yeah.
But they called the quote that they took from this 4-star review was Star Wars meets Mad Max.
How can you do that, though? That'd be that. Yeah, okay.
Well, to give it its dues, like, I'm not a Star Wars fan. We've established this multiple times.
I'm stunned by that.
Imagine.
Yeah, I know.
Breaking news, folks.
Yeah, that's not fake news.
But I thought that does kind of make it sound interesting. And maybe, you know, that's obviously what it's designed for. That's why I put it on there. Because Star Wars meets Mad Max, as you quite rightly said. How does that work?
Isn't that just screamers?
Okay, so the plot basically, there's a desolate landscape.
Right.
Which is where the Mad Max thing comes from.
Yeah.
Right, it's got an Australian director.
Right.
Which I guess is also where the Australian link comes from.
Okay.
You've got a hero called Kane. He comes down from a spaceship where he's working because the planet below him... Hang on, I've actually written this down. So I don't get it.
Oh, wow, okay.
Because it is so convoluted.
This will be good.
Ridiculous.
Is it as convoluted as Transformers?
Probably not. I don't think many films
are. No, nothing sounds that bad.
Okay, it's about a futuristic fantasy... It's a futuristic fantasy adventure movie with a father called Kane, played by Daniel McPherson, who abandons his post aboard a space station because his daughter, which is the child,
is in
a bunker on the planet below them,
right,
where there's a deadly virus that's going to kill people.
Is the virus called Osiris?
No.
Is the bunker called Osiris?
No. So
on
the surface is a prison.
Right.
Right, bear in mind it's desolate landscape, there's a prison, nothing all around. Sai, who's played by Kellan Lutz of the Twilight Saga, of course.
Okay.
Because you obviously knew that.
Yeah. I'm a big fan.
Yeah, big Kellan Lutz fans. I've got a t-shirt.
He's an escaped prisoner.
Okay.
From the big facility.
Is the facility called Osiris?
No.
Okay.
So
Osiris come up anywhere.
He's getting me on a joke name.
Yeah. So the prison's rioting.
Okay.
And actually, there's a lie that's spread about the prison, which is that they're going to let off a weapon of mass destruction.
Right. The prison is?
Yeah. There's a reactor there that they're going to blow up.
Why is there a reactor in a prison?
Well, precisely. A reactor.
It's basically like the boiler in the hotel in China.
There's actually a biological weapon, right? There's no reactor, there's a biological
There's a virus in the prison.
Yeah. So the weapon, is actually a weapon from the people who are running the space station, which is turning people into mutant monsters.
Okay.
And the idea of these mutant monsters is they're going around these planets. What they want to do is unleash them on other planets where it just wipes out the population.
Right. Okay.
Okay.
So
why?
Presumably,
what for?
So they can sell the planet.
So it's an Independence Day prequel.
Yeah, it's similar. Except there's no actual plan about how they get rid of the monsters. So have you seen the Simpsons episode where they talk about, oh, we to send in, get rid of the snakes, we'll just send in the bears. We'll just send in the lions. So that's the beauty of it, because winter comes and then they all die and freeze to death. There is absolutely no logic to apply to this film whatsoever. It should be kind of straightforward. Man goes down to the planet to rescue his daughter.
Yeah.
They add so much convoluted plot that's superfluous. It doesn't bring anything to the story. There's no tension, there's no drama. So I was a little bit annoyed about that because it's unnecessarily complicated. They also have narration, and the narration comes from Kane's daughter,
right,
who's on the planet. He's talking about everything as it's happened in the past. Right, so bear in mind, she's talking about, like, she's from the future and she's talking about the past.
Okay.
So I'm thinking, okay, so it's going to be slightly non-linear. So they intro the film with this piece about Kane and how his family left him because he was involved in some kind of genocide, which was accidental. Where he...
How do you accidentally commit genocide?
His whole crew were massacred because he was drunk.
What?
You're telling me, right? So I'm sitting there thinking...
How do you commit genocide when you get drunk? That's so a night out and off.
Yeah, so he basically led his troops to
get
into...
Basically how the Nazi
party started. It was just a joke that got out of hand. Yeah, So I'm watching this first bit thinking, okay, so this is in the future, and then we go back to the past where he's sober, and the first thing you see of him after that is he's driving along in a spaceship, like, you know, you see in the start of Star Wars where it's the floating car thing that goes across the...
Yeah. Land speeder.
Thank you.
Yeah.
The floating car thing.
The floating car-y thing.
You know.
Yeah. From the spacey, place.
His mate, who's a walking tin can bucket thing.
Yeah. R2-D2.
Really bin. Yeah.
C-3PO.
Yeah. So I'm thinking, okay, so what just happened is the end of the film. It's going to do a bit of Apocalypse Now, where, you know, the beginning is the end. No, that doesn't happen. So I got to the end of the film thinking, so what the fuck was that bit about him getting pissed and killing everyone about?
Was that actually the origin?
Well, then I went back and rewatched the first 10 minutes. And I'm like, no, this is something that actually happened in the past, but he kept his post and actually stayed on and worked at the space station, and now he's pissed off at them and he's going back to the planet to rescue his daughter.
At this stage, I don't know what's going on.
Well, neither did I, and I was watching it, and I went back and watched it again. It doesn't make any sense. So the director,
you watched it twice?
No, I watched the first 15 minutes again.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, because I wanted to make sure I wasn't, you know, maybe I'm stupid. Maybe I didn't get
maybe it. Maybe you're too dedicated to this podcast.
Yeah. that's a thought. So the guy is called Shane Abbs. Yeah, he's Australian, as I said. He wrote and directed this. So I watched the extras on the DVD because he talked, you know, it's an interview with him, and I thought maybe he'd give a bit of insight about it. I mean, fair play to him. He seems really enthusiastic about it. He's very, you know, when he's talking about it, you can see he's quite wide-eyed about it, thinking this is what we were going to do. Our plan was to make this, like, epic sci-fi. It's not a sci-fi. It's a fantasy film that has a bit of space in it. It's not really a road movie. I mean, the best bit about the film actually involves these two hillbilly types. And I'm trying to look for the names in my notes. This is a problem with trying to do it from a little tiny phone screen. Jip.
It is a proper page of notes as well.
Yeah,
it is.
Jip, who's played by Isabel Lucas, who's from Transformers Revenge of the Fallen. There's a mark of quality.
Oh, that one. God.
Yeah. So she was in one of the Transformers films.
Now that's genocide.
But she's Australian as well.
Yeah.
And I think she's in, like, Home and Away or something, or Neighbours probably.
Aren't they all?
Yeah.
It's a bit like being a British actor and having to be in the bill.
You've been on the bill. Yeah.
She is... she's actually okay in this. She's fine.
Mm.
And her boyfriend, for want of a better term, Bill, is played by Luke Ford, who was in The Mummy, Tomb of the Dragon Emperor. So again,
was he the boy? Like the son of Brendan Fraser?
Like the young Brendan Fraser.
He was, wasn't he? He was like the young Brendan Fraser.
Oh, is that right?
I think so. I vaguely remember that film.
He looks about, he must be 35.
Yeah, exactly, because that was a good 10 years ago now, wasn't it?
Is that the one with Jet Li?
2003-ish?
Yeah, 2007, 2009.
Oh, was it?
Maybe.
Okay.
Well, anyway, so those two were the best thing in it. Yeah. They've got chemistry on screen, they're quite fun. They're very thin characters, but at least there's a bit of personality. And actually, to be fair to Kellan Lutz as well, the guy from Twilight again, I mean, I don't know why I'm repeating that because...
Maybe you're actually a Twilight fan and you just want to keep telling us.
Yeah, I'm trying to sneak that in there. He was okay as well, to be fair to him. But it's not a good film, really. Some weird dialogue. Like, not inappropriately, just, I think, unintentionally funny.
Oh, right.
Like, they're trying to raid a... what looks like a well... established facility. But then they're in like a stairwell where there's people who clearly live there. Someone just shouts down, "Get out of my stairwell!" And you think, this passed because why? A, the accent, and B, the line.
Were they going for the "get off my porch, boy" kind of thing?
Kind of, yeah. But then it's like, this character means nothing. It's just a guy upstairs.
Yeah.
Why?
Okay.
It's not funny.
Just a bad gag.
Yeah. The only thing that's going for it is it does look relatively good. The bit where it's a road chase movie, where they're in this big armoured bus and they're driving across the desert and they've got to get from the, like, bar place to the prison. It's decent. That's a decent section of the movie, because everyone has to, you know, you get a bit of character in there, you get Kane and his daughter, and you get all the drama and tension, and actually when the spaceships are on there and they shoot up the bus, and it's just like, this is really actually, this looks good, this looks better than a straight-to-DVD kind of film.
Yeah.
It's just that the dialogue, the script, the plotting...
So everything about it.
It's just a bit too low.
It's bad.
Yeah. It just doesn't match up to the way it looks, which is a shame. But yeah, if you're interested in it...
Well,
it
I
comes
mean,
out, comes out 14th of July on demand, and then DVD and Blu-ray 24th of July.
I don't think I'm going to be demanding this, are you, Brooke?
No.
I wouldn't recommend it. I mean, it may be maybe someone who's really into sci-fi, fantasy stuff.
What's it called? I want to see if I've actually had it appear in my...
Origin Wars, it's called. So, yeah. The monsters in it, I forgot to say, the monsters, they use practical effects. Practical effects are top-notch.
Right, okay.
Yeah. It's not just all CGI. The
Fair enough.
Good. The monsters reminded me of, like, Dark Crystal.
Okay.
Which is, you know, a positive
thing. That's pretty good.
They look quite good. How they're used is a bit more ropey.
Dodgy.
But at least, like, we watched stuff like... The Great Wall earlier this year. Right, the thing
I like The Great Wall. I thought it was alright.
I haven't seen it yet.
6 out of 10 kind of movie.
Yeah, it was alright. It's got a lovely score.
Yeah. But the... well, you would know, wouldn't you? Because of your podcast.
My film music podcast.
Yeah,
yes.
Which is, what, Cineworld's top 5 music podcast right now.
Well, I wasn't going to mention it. I mean, you know, it's nice of you to say.
I thought I'd drop that in there.
Yeah, cheers.
Notes.
Cheers. Yeah. Thank you. I don't even have to plug my own stuff anymore. Cheers.
But, you know, in the Great Wall, we had the monsters, which were just shit-looking, bland, CGI, grey, indistinguishable dog things.
Mm.
It's awful. I thought,
yeah,
at least here, the practical effects show, you know, it's not outdated. Do
yeah.
it. It looks good.
I'm a big fan of practical effects. Everything
yeah.
in The Void is practical effects.
The Void, yeah.
Void. It looks gorgeous. It looks horrifying, but it looks
yeah,
gorgeous.
Yeah.
So, but anyway, that was Origin Wars. I think I'm done with that. I haven't really got anything
else.
Everybody's done with
yeah,
it.
Yeah. You've really successfully turned everyone off Origin Wars, because we were all clamouring for it. Well, mine is a film that came out in 2015 called The Childhood of a Leader, which I don't know if you're familiar with this either.
Yeah, no.
So I've heard of it, I think.
It's bizarrely, it's the first film, writer-director film from Brady Corbett. Now, do you know who Brady Corbett is?
No.
Owen?
Brady Corbett. Tell me.
Okay.
Related to Ronnie.
It sadly not, no. That was a bad Ronnie Corbett impression.
Okay,
let's move on. I was even doing the motion of the glasses as I was doing that. It's the only way I can do it.
People aren't getting the full effect.
No, they're not getting the full. We need to be a video podcast. But yeah, he played Alan Tracy in the Thunderbirds movie.
Okay.
Yeah. Exactly. Right. Now, that I don't know if you watched that, dog shit. But that was, it was awful, right? Because the original Thunderbirds is a great film, but the film was terrible. But yeah, that was what I knew him from. And he's directed and written this really strange drama. Essentially, it's about the childhood of a boy who would ultimately end up becoming a fascist leader of a state. Hitler-ish, but
okay.
As Corbett has said, he didn't create to set out a story about a young Hitler. The person he becomes, and you don't really fully see that person, is meant to be like an amalgamation of a fascist leader who would grow up to be a, you know, that kind of person ruling an iron state. So the story is about this family at the very end of World War One.
Mm-hmm.
The dad, played by Liam Cunningham from Game of Thrones, and the mom, played by Berenice Bejo, I think her name is, a French actress, in this old house just outside Paris. And the dad works for President Woodrow Wilson, and he's ratifying the Treaty of Versailles, which obviously, as everyone knows probably, was a major reason why the Nazi Party got into power, because of the reparations against Germany at the end of World War One. all that. So the idea is there's this subtext going on of this dad working for these people who would just destroy the German state. Although the kid doesn't grow up to be the German fascist leader. It's more an idea about the conditions that can create a fascist state, mm-hmm. and the story of a boy who is troubled as a young boy. He throws stones at other children. He wets the bed. He is alienated by his parents to some extent, who are cold, who treat him in a very structured way. And it's that whole idea of nature versus nurture, whether or mm-hmm. not whether or not he's genuinely born a little bit crazy, because there is an element of I mean, the kid who plays him is called Tom Sweet. Does a really good job of giving him quite a sociopathic edge, even as a young boy. There is just something in his eyes that's just not right. But it's a weird drama. It's very strangely put together by Corby. It's very slow. It's not traditional in the story it takes. It's sort of broken up by chapters called tantrums of the boy and different things that he builds up to. Mm-hmm. It's a very stark film, and it wouldn't be to everyone's tastes, but I thought it was fascinating. I thought it was really interesting in the kind of underlayer of things it's talking about. So if you're interested in kind of psychodrama and politics and the political undercurrents of, like, the 20th century, it's interesting. And Brady Corbett, it's there's a little bit of almost, like, film school pretension sometimes in it, in the way he directs it. But for a first effort, I mean, it's really quite ambitious in terms of theme and idea. So it's on Sky Cinema now. Look it up, because it wasn't massively seen. Mm-hmm. It's also got a really great score by Scott Walker, which is very sort of, you know, operatic and weird. It's good.
And what was it called again?
The Childhood of a Leader.
Oh, okay.
So yeah, check it out. It's no Transformers 5 though.
Not much is.
No, let's be honest. Let's get down to our triple bill then, gents, shall we? And obviously the triple bill today, as we're coming back together, mm-hmm. us three old contemptibles, we're going to put the band back together, and we're going to talk about films where the gang come together, the band are put back together, films where teams work together, and, you know, whether they're a good team or they're a bad team. So, Owen, you go first this time. What's your team?
Okay. I've got a long list, but I'm going to pick three that are...
Okay.
So, first one, I think I may have spoken to you about this before, Brooker.
Okay.
And whether it was on the podcast or not, I don't know. But it was 13 Assassins, Takashi Miike's.
We have spoken about this before.
We have a while ago, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Takashi Miike, for people who don't necessarily recognise the name, straight away did Ichi the Killer.
Love Ichi the Killer.
Which is just one of the most gruesome.
Oh, yeah, but it's also one of the best films ever. Yeah. Found. It is so cool.
One of my favourite bits of trivia about Ichi the Killer, which I probably said before, you know, the intro titles where you see it on the screen where it's written in Spunk, is real Spunk.
What?
Yeah.
Whose Spunk is it?
Crew members. Ooh. More than one. Yeah.
How did you get that job?
Lads, to go for it.
Yeah. It's actually Spunk.
Wow.
But anyway,
okay.
There's no Spunk in 13 Assassins.
I'm not interested.
No.
Okay.
But he also did Audition as well. People know Audition.
Yeah.
I've heard of Audition.
Notorious.
Yeah. Which was one of my favourites as well.
Yeah. It's one Maya can't watch with you, isn't it?
Maya did watch it, no, to be fair.
Oh, did she?
Yeah. I didn't think she would, because she made me turn off Pet Sematary at the Achilles heel bit.
Exactly.
And obviously, Audition has quite a nasty Achilles heel bit.
Horrendously, the sounds of
is
it.
Is this the one where a bloke gets his top chopped off as well? Or am I thinking of a different film?
You're thinking of a different film.
I don't think it's his knob, is it?
Okay. No. Alright. He gets his heel sliced.
I'm not ruining it. Because if you haven't seen it, it would ruin it if I told you.
Okay,
but
yeah.
You do need to watch it.
I will.
It's very good, But anyway, so 13 Assassins. It's set towards the end of the feudal Japan period. Mm. There's an evil lord in it. He wants to rule Japan, but a group of old samurai have to get together to stop him. So that's the band getting back together. The premise is basically he's the most horrendous, evil, unnecessarily evil man. Evil towards women, children, all the peasants in the sort of village. I think it's set in 1845, but this guy, I had to write this down because there's no way I'd remember this. Lord Matsudaira Naritsugu.
I don't think you've mangled that too badly, actually, considering.
Goro Inagaki is the actor who plays him. He does a phenomenal job as well. Really turns him into a nasty bastard, this guy. Yeah, he's based on a real guy, apparently. Mm. But so I tried to research this, because I really like the film 13 Assassins, and I thought what I'd do is look up a bit of the history of it. Mm. There's nothing really online about this guy, so I don't know... Well, not online, I mean, I couldn't find anything on IMDb trivia, and I couldn't find anything on Wikipedia about him. I even searched, like, the history of the period on Wikipedia, and nothing. But all I know is that he was basically, I think, 26 when he died in 1835. So 10 years even before the film is set. Mm. So I'm guessing it's very fictionalised telling of this guy.
Yeah.
But either way, he's a great film character. So the whole film, you want to see him get his comeuppance, because he's such a bastard, such a horrible bastard. And it's part of the writer's job, Daisuke Tengad and Tanio Ikegami.
You didn't make this easy on yourself.
I didn't.
No, you didn't.
No, wait till you hear the next film. Fucking hell.
You're doing a bad job, though, to be fair.
But I think the writing is great, because they could so easily have turned him into a pantomime villain. Yeah. He could easily have just been, oh, well, what's he going to do? Oh, the next bad thing, he's going to stick his fingers up at the, you know, carriage window at all the peasants. But they don't do stuff like when he's bad, he is genuinely reprehensible. Yeah. And you want him to die or... Well, no, you do want him to die. You don't even want him to just be jailed or anything. It's like,
he's
this
that
guy
bad.
Is fucking horrendous. But the actual samurai stuff is fantastic. So one of the best things about 13 Assassins, it's quite slow to begin with, I thought. You know, and I was watching it thinking, is it going to basically be a drama? Or are they going to put more into this? They save everything for like the last half an hour, 45 minutes. All then is set up, and it feels slow, but it's so worth it, because you get to know these people, you get to know the assassins, and that battle scene. I don't know if you remember it, but that is so brutal. I watched it again on YouTube before we did this. So you've got swords slicing people, blood just flying everywhere. Handmade traps. There's a massive like wooden gate that comes down and slices people in. Obviously arrows, gunpowder, people blow up, you see stuff flying everywhere. It's just really dirty and violent and weirdly looks beautiful. Like in the way that Takeshi Mike
I say, which does. Is pretty much Takeshi Mike through and through. Mm. Absolutely gorgeous, but really, really, really nasty.
It's like you can't take your eyes off it, but your eyes are kind of obscured through your fingers or from behind a cushion, because it's gory. There's no two ways about it. It's gory, it is horrendous and horrific, but beautiful. But yeah, so the whole film is great, and amazing movie. 13 Assassins.
Takeshi Mike's one of them, though, isn't he? He does like two different kinds of films. He does really, really good dramas like Audition, Ichi the Killer, and he done
Yakuza Apocalypse.
Absolutely bizarre.
The Kung Fu Ninja Frog thing?
Yeah, Kung Fu Ninja Frog.
Really?
Yeah.
I'm not familiar at all with his stuff, so...
I travelled to watch this film because I really... Because it was a
surprise
film.
Kung Fu Ninja Frog?
Yeah, but that's like one little bit of it.
Yeah.
It's mainly... It's about like a guy who's caught up in a gang warfare thing.
Yeah.
Who, but he's
all the Yakuza are turning into zombies.
Yeah.
Vampires.
Yeah,
all vampires.
Right, okay, yeah. Yeah.
I know what you're talking about. Yagin Rahean's in it, the guy who plays Mad Dog in The Raid.
Yeah.
He's the only reason that him and the fact that it was Takeshi Mike, I was like, I have to watch this film.
Yeah.
And it was fucking weird.
I didn't like it, I have to admit. I
really kind of enjoyed it, but in that it's Friday, I'm really tired. kind of. You know when you get really, you're just out of it and you find everything funny?
Yeah.
That's kind of how I felt watching this film. I was like, just.
Weirdly, 13 Assassins has a kind of supernatural bit in it towards the end, which always that took me by surprise, and I wasn't quite sure what the hell that was about.
I haven't seen 13 Assassins for ages.
Yeah. There's like an imp guy or something. He's like a spirit, but like I don't know what. He just like it's revealed at the end. He's like a. It's not like a reveal, but it just comes out of nowhere really.
Weird.
But yeah, it's weird. It is weird, but that's Takeshi Mike for it.
Yeah.
Okay, well, sounds good. Sounds interesting. Brooker, what about you? What's your first choice?
I'll stick with the samurai theme-ish.
Okay.
And I'll go with Ronin.
Oh, hang on. Is this...
1998.
Oh, I love this film.
John Frankenheimer film.
So I love this film.
De Niro, Sean Bean, Natasha McElhorn,
Jean Reno,
Stellan Skarsgård.
Yeah.
And again, the same as like the Usual Suspects I was talking about earlier. It's literally just these bunch of mercenaries all brought together to do a heist. But the thing with Ronin is, and the standout thing with Ronin, and this was Frankenheimer through and through,
yeah,
the car chasing in this film.
They're some of the best.
Yeah, absolutely. And not in, you know, we're not talking about sports cars, just sort of random Audi and random BMW.
Yeah.
It is just great, great car chasing. But yeah, it's, I haven't seen it for a long time, and I have to admit, when we said what we're going to do for our triple, I did think, I'm going to struggle here. Because a bit like, you know, like we were saying earlier, when I'm going to be on a podcast, I try and, for my what we've been watching, I like to do a weird little horror thing, because that's
I
do.
Yeah, yeah.
And I always like to squeeze a weird little horror thing into the triple bills as well. I couldn't do it this time
around. Really?
I couldn't think of one. And we only like 12 hours to prepare as well. I don't know what we do here. So,
yeah.
So I went to, I don't want to do Ocean's 11. I don't know. Okay. Ronin.
Well, they're Steve's. Yeah. Steve came up with Ocean. Steve is currently in a public toilet in Oxford. We just heard word. He's still struggling, so hopefully he'll be here by the end of the podcast.
Anyway.
So, yeah, the thing with Ronin was I sat and watched it years ago. Well, I watched it when it first came out and absolutely fell in love with it. I think it was probably the first Frankenheimer film I watched as well. Well, in 98, I was 16.
Yeah, same.
I'm not supposed to be watching Frankenheimer films at 16. But yeah, no, Ronin was really good. And I had no idea what it was about when I saw it. And I knew what Ronin was and wanted to know how that fit in with the guy with the gun on the VHS cover. But yeah, obviously, like De Niro on top form in that film, as is everybody else. You know, Sean Bean is the cowardly.
Yeah.
Isn't really an SAS guy like he says he is.
It's really good.
But yeah, perfect, near perfect thriller.
It really is, yeah. I love that film to bits. And it's got a new release from Arrow Video coming soon with some. I can't wait for this. It's got like
that bad boy,
festooned with extras.
I pre ordered that bad boy the second it got announced.
They're doing great work on Arrow.
They've done a 2K remaster of Audition on Blu-ray, and it's gorgeous.
Fantastic. Yeah, I can't wait for that Ronin Blu-ray because, I mean, it is a cracking film.
Yeah.
It really is. And it doesn't lose anything at any point. You can watch those car chases all over again.
Yeah, but it's the same, again, like so what we're saying about Usual Suspects. There's no CGI.
Yeah.
It's
all done.
It's all talking and it's all real world stunts. It's all real world chases. The age doesn't matter.
No.
It doesn't date at all.
The only thing in it is
cars are a bit old.
The only thing in it is Robert De Niro cannot say Hereford.
he does the American thing. They'll call it Hereford.
Hereford. What's the name of the boathouse in Hereford?
Yeah.
Hereford, Bob.
Okay, yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah. All Americans call it Hereford. All of them.
And they go on a road trip to Leicester.
Yeah.
But yeah, great choice.
But yeah, Ronin, that was my first one. It wasn't my first one, but then I was talking about samurai, so I was like, well, I can segue this.
So what's your samurai film? I mean,
sadly, mine isn't a samurai film. I'm breaking the chain. Mine is a film that everyone else hates, I think, except me. Right?
Suicide Squad.
The Oscar-winning Suicide Squad.
Yeah. It was this close to being on my list.
Let's not even get into that one. Mine is a film that is, if anything, considered worse by a lot of people. The League of Extraordinary Gentlemen.
Oh, God.
What?
Right? Now, I'll tell you why, right?
Okay.
Now, I really like this film. Right?
You can't argue me about Suicide Squad anymore.
No, I can't. To be fair, this didn't win an Oscar, so... obviously, the adaptation of the Alan Moore novel, graphic novel, by Stephen Norrington, although...
The Man That Made Blade.
The Man That Made Blade, although I don't think he put his name to this, really, because, you know, it sounded like a horrendous production.
I don't think he's made anything since.
Well, no, but that's basically, I think, because Sean Connery blacklisted his name throughout Hollywood, because I think it was he at the premiere when somebody... He wasn't at the premiere, the director, and somebody asked Sean Connery where he was, and he went, "Chuck the local asylum." Yeah, so they didn't get on.
Oh,
but there was a flood and all kinds of things. So it was a pretty tortured production. I've always liked this. And obviously the story is it's the Victorian Avengers, basically.
Yeah.
You know, all the characters from, you know, Victorian literature. So
12-rated Penny Dreadful.
Basically, yeah. So you've got Alan Quatermain, that's Connery, in the last film he ever did, which is just I mean, I like this film. It shouldn't be his last film. His swan song should have been Albert Finney in Skyfall, let's be honest. Yeah. There you go. But it's like, it's that that kind of character. It's, you've got Mina Harker, who's the, you know, the Dracula kind of character. She's the one who was bitten by Dracula, and so she's now got the eyes at bat. You've got Tom Sawyer, the, you know, the suave American secret agent. You've got Captain Nemo. You've got all these people. The Invisible Man.
Yeah.
Isn't now, Jason Fleming Jekyll
he
and Hyde?
Is. Jason Fleming is Jekyll and Hyde. That's, yeah, he's very good.
He's the director of Eat Local.
But it's...
I went looking for that, so a quick segue. I went looking for that on Blu-ray the other day. You can't buy on Blu-ray in this country, you can only buy it in Germany. You know what it's called in Germany?
Rain of Blood.
Eat Locals. With an S. I had to go through
just
and make sure. I thought it might have been an Asylum version.
Amazing. But yeah, I've always liked this. I don't know why. I shouldn't.
I don't know why.
I'm aware it's dodgy, right? But, I mean, I love the score, for a start. I know I keep talking about scores, but that's my part of my thing. But also, I don't know, I love Connery in almost anything, right? I just like it. You know those films, you just can't explain why.
It does suffer from being kind of that mid to late 90s comic book movie. They all look like shit.
Yeah. They do, yeah.
None of them have dated well.
Well, I think this was made in, like, about 2003, which was a really dodgy period. You're right. It was a dodgy period for blockbusters anyway.
Well, it was Brothers Grimm.
Yeah.
Those kind of films that just look exactly the same. It's just around Daredevil and Catwoman.
Yeah, it was terrible.
Elektra.
It was pre-Batman Begins when they decided to then start make good superhero movies. And it is a superhero movie, let's be honest. But I can't explain it. I just always enjoy it. And it's cheesy, it's dodgy, it's got some ripe dialogue. Some of the CGI is shite. But, you know, it's got Sean Connery punching people off his age.
Yeah.
It's got, like, Tony Curran being very sardonic as the Invisible Man. It's got a ridiculous twist involving the M.
Yeah.
And I don't know, I just like it. I can't defend it, I just like it.
Have you read the graphic novels?
Yeah, I have, yeah. I've read the first book of them.
Yeah.
I do like them. I do, and there is, to be fair, a much, much better, well, quite frankly, not a film, because you can't get all that in one film.
No.
That's a TV series that's being waited, that should be made. Something that looks like American Gods or something like that in terms of beautiful canvas. It's a TV series.
Well, the comics start off in the Victorian period, don't they? But then as each series comes, like, they have 1969, they have all these different, like...
They go forward. The war and things. And, I mean, you could do a whole saga of it.
Yeah.
This film does not do it justice, but...
A bit like American Horror Story or something, where each one's set in a different...
Absolutely, with different kind of characters and stuff, but...
I remember when Penny Dreadful first came out, two or three episodes in, me and the guy that I used to work with, who used to sit in my... We used to just talk shit. Films for hours on end.
Yeah.
And we both went, this is Alan Moore.
There's no two ways,
absolutely Alan Moore.
Yeah. Really is, yeah, it really is. And I mean, obviously, this Universal Dart Universe is going to cover some of this territory now. Well, in the modern day.
Used to live around the corner from
that guy.
Oh, because he's in Northampton.
He's from Northampton. I lived in Northampton for 10 years.
Awesome. Did you ever see him?
Yes.
Oh, great.
He's a fucking weirdo.
He looks like
a weirdo as well.
Yeah.
The film of League of Extraordinary Gentlemen is one of the few things that's got his name anywhere near it that doesn't have a rape in it as well.
Not that
I'm saying that's what he likes. I'm just saying he uses it as a device in almost everything he writes.
He does.
Watchmen, V for Vendetta. It's all got a dark rape from hell, which I was reading recently as well.
But he also, because he famously won't have his name anywhere near any of them.
No,
he doesn't think anything that he writes can be adapted into films.
Which
to be fair,
true. I mean, you know, Watchmen. As much as I don't like Zack Snyder, Watchmen's probably one of the best things he's ever done. That was perfectly good.
I wasn't a fan of Watchmen, not because it's Zack Snyder. My bias against Zack Snyder happened long after Watchmen. But I just didn't enjoy the film. V for Vendetta, I love.
V for Vendetta is great. It's the best Alan Moore adaptation. From Hell is alright.
I wanted to love From Hell.
I've not watched it. I mean, I'm almost two-thirds of the way through the graphic novel.
It's made by the guys that made Dead Presidents and or Menace to Society.
Right.
John Singleton? No,
John Singleton was Poison the Hood,
didn't he?
Yeah.
Oh no, the Hughes brothers.
Hughes brothers, thank you. Okay. Yes.
Alan and Owen. No, Paul.
Owen Paul.
Owen Paul. What was his name? Alan and something. Yeah. Andrew. Something.
But I think they made their presidents, yeah, almost certainly, and I think they made Men's Society as well. So From Hell was a big step to the side,
yeah,
for those, yeah, guys.
Johnny Depp,
it is Johnny Depp and the bird from
loads Austin of people. Oh, Heather Graham, Heather Graham, Ian Holmes, big cast.
Beyonce.
Beyonce.
From Austin Powers.
That'd be amazing. So yeah, that's my one. Owen, what's your second choice then?
So I've gone for a film from 2012 called The Thieves. Have either of you seen The Thieves?
No.
It's a Korean film.
No.
Directed by Choi Dong-hoon, which, for anyone who knows Korean movies, is the guy who did Wuchi, the Demon Slayer.
Oh, I've heard of that.
Yeah, which is quite a fun fantasy sort of film. He did Assassination as well, which was like a period drama from, yep, last year or the year before. Which was quite fun as well.
Yeah.
He also did Taza, the Card Heist, I think is its full title. But basically, The Thieves is a heist movie where you've got 10 thieves, yeah, who come from across Korea and Hong Kong. Some of whom have a history with each other, and they get together under the stewardship of Macau Park to steal a diamond worth 20 million from a casino.
Oh.
Sound familiar?
Yeah, it's Ocean's 11.
It's,
yes,
basically a Korean Ocean's 11.
Okay.
Because I didn't want to pick Ocean's 11.
No.
Because I thought...
That's Steve's. Steve's on his way.
Steve's choice, yeah. I didn't want to steal his thunder before he gets it.
No. I don't like it whenever examples come for these triple push, you go, like this. But you've just removed all the thugs from my list.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Yeah. Yeah, cheers for that. Yeah.
Yeah. But it is very similar in terms of story, in terms of style as well, because it also brought together a bunch of like the country's, Korea's biggest film stars,
yeah,
sort of most well-known, famous names and faces. Right, I'm going to run through a couple of them. They won't mean much to us, but if I say the films that they're from, you're going to go, "Oh,
yeah,
that guy."
Yeah.
So Kim Young-suk.
Yeah.
No, Kim Young-suk. He's the ex-cop turned pimp in The,
okay,
Chaser. So if you've seen The Chaser, everyone will know who he is. He's also in The Yellow Sea.
I've no idea about any of these things.
From The Yellow Sea.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm not up on this.
Lee Jung-jae, who's from he's in Assassination. He's the guy who's caught up in the basically the gangster.
Okay.
The,
yeah,
guy who's stuck in the middle of it all. We've got Jun Ji-hyun, who's the girl in My Sassy Girl, not the shitty American film, but the actual Korean movie. Simon Yam, Cantonese guy. He's from Ip Man 1 and 2.
Never seen an Ip Man.
I've heard of it.
Never seen Ip Man. Oh, man. Okay, you've got to watch Ip Man.
I know, I desperately want to watch Ip Man. I don't know why I never watched them, but now there's three, and I'm like, shit, that's a lot to catch up on.
There's a lot of Ip Man movies, but only three worth watching.
Yeah.
That's Ip Man 1, 2, and 3. They're the ones with Donnie Yen.
How many Ip Man films are there?
Tons, but I think canon is only three.
Right, okay.
There's like the origins of Ip Man, which,
yeah,
doesn't have Donnie Yen in it, which is okay.
To be fair, there's a trilogy steelbook that you can buy.
Yeah.
But the only reason I haven't bought it is because I haven't seen any of them yet. So once it goes cheap enough, I would just,
yeah,
buy it and watch them.
The Grandmaster as well is with,
yeah,
which is with, shit, what's his name?
Grandmaster Jackie Chan.
No, it's not. But the director is the guy who did In the Mood for Love and,
Oh.
Shit, fuck,
yeah,
me.
I know.
Him.
I don't know.
The very famous Chinese guy who
that
I suddenly can't remember.
I'm going to wait for Ip Man Origin Wars though.
Oh, Ip Man Origin Wars, Ip Man the Osiris Tribe.
Space-based,
yeah,
Ip Man.
Yeah.
You've got Oday Soo,
yep,
who's in
everything.
Yeah. So even Tony, you must have seen, if you've seen Old Boy, if you've seen The Host, he's in The Attorney, he's in Thirst, he's in The Good, The Bad and The Weird.
Yeah, I've
The Show Must Go On.
Have you seen Thirst?
No, I've not seen any. I don't watch any of this.
I think it's on Amazon Prime.
Okay,
yeah. You should watch
I've got Amazon Prime.
Mainly because it's got the most nightmarish sex scene.
Yeah, where they're flying all around the room. It's basically two vampires, and it's got Song Kang-ho in it, who's fucking amazing.
Okay,
one
he's
of the
also
best actors
everything
working today.
Yeah.
But he's also in, I mean, my favourite role of Oday Soo, old Dale Soo, is in A Bit of Sweet Life.
Yeah.
He plays a Cantonese guy who translates between a Russian gang and a South Korean gangster.
Yeah.
And he's fucking brilliant in that, very funny. But yeah, basically, if you've seen any Korean movie ever, he's probably in it.
Right.
It's got, actually, probably one of my favourite characters in it. It's a woman who's she plays a character called Bubblegum, and she is fucking hilarious. Like, really makes the film because she's just so good. Kim Haesuk, she's called. She's an actress. I'm sure she won't mind me saying she's a little bit on the larger side. She's quite known for being basically the McCarthy of Korean cinema.
I get the feeling she would mind you saying this.
I don't think so.
She listens to the podcast.
Yeah, exactly. We're going to be getting some strong mail here, I mean.
Yeah. She's also in Thirst, actually. She's in Thirst. It's just brilliant. It's full of Cantonese pop stars, K-pop stars as well. But it's just like, it's so flashy. It's so over the top. The heists in it are fantastic. They have a few smaller ones where they build up to the larger one. It is basically Ocean's 11, but Korean.
Yeah.
I just want people to, if you go and watch the trailer on YouTube and then tell me you don't want to watch that film, tell me you don't want to watch that kind of blockbuster, because it's, anyone who's got any hang-ups about Korean cinema, oh, it's always really violent, or it's always really sexually aggressive, or it's not. It's just a fun, twisty, massive heist film. Okay. We don't really make films like that over here in the UK. We don't really make the, they don't really make them in the US either, like the way that they do in Korea. It's just fantastic fun.
Awesome.
Really, like, awesome.
I'm sold.
Movie. Yeah.
Yeah, brilliant.
Excellent.
Brooker, can you top that?
No. Mainly because my next one is maybe the most mainstream of the films I could come up with. And I'm going to do the one from last year as well, just because it's the one I prefer the most. That's The Magnificent Seven.
Okay,
The remake.
Yeah, the remake of the remake. The remake of the reimagined.
Of the Seven Samurai.
The Seven Samurai, yeah.
Okay. God, you shoehorned another samurai movie in.
I could have done. But the thing is, the thing with The Magnificent Seven is I don't like The Magnificent Seven, the original. I'm not a fan.
What, the 60s? The 19th century? John Sturges one?
Yeah. And I love Westerns. Yeah. I absolutely love them. But there's something about the original Magnificent Seven I just don't really like. So the 2016 Magnificent Seven, made by Antoine Fuqua, the guy that made Training Day and several other films.
Did he do Sabotage? Was that him?
No, nope, that was David Ayer.
He did The Equalizer, didn't he? With
he did The Equalizer, he did Southpaw with Jake Gyllenhaal.
Yeah, he did.
I love Antoine Fuqua, and pretty much it's the only reason I went to see Magnificent Seven, because it wasn't because I liked the original. but it's Denzel Washington, who is getting a band together to go and take on a ruthless cowboy bad guy. So it's Denzel Washington and Vincent D'Onofrio.
Chris Pratt.
Yeah. Yep. Have you seen it?
I haven't. I want to. I do want to watch it.
It's fun.
Mm.
And that's the thing about it. And I remember getting into an argument with somebody on Twitter before it came out, after it got officially rated as a 12.
Mm.
Because I was quite annoyed, because I like my westerns to be quite violent.
Yeah.
Because they're westerns, and this isn't the 1950s. I want, you know, I want Unforgiven, I want Tombstone, I want violent westerns. And hilariously, the guy that I ended up in an argument with, it's all about the story. And then 6 months later, got really pissy when Ghost in the Shell was 12 rated instead of 15. So I didn't rub it in. He knows who he is.
You're the bigger man.
But yeah, so...
Was it Steve?
No. I don't think Steve cared that Ghost in the Shell was really top-rated.
We would ask him, but, you know, he's still over there.
Yeah,
he'll be over in a minute.
Yeah, he'll be back in a minute.
But the thing with Magnificent Seven is a proper, fun caper film. It's funny from start to finish, and I mean genuinely, I think it's genuinely funny. Like, all the comedy in it works. All the action in it works really well. Denzel Washington just plays, at this point he just plays Denzel Washington. He's Denzel Washington as Denzel Washington. He's been the same since Training Day and Man on Fire and The Equalizer. He's the same character.
He's like Tom Hanks, isn't he? He's one of those actors now. He just turns
or Tom
up
Cruise.
And, yeah, and turns up and just bees himself.
Yeah.
Really?
Which for me is fine for Denzel Washington.
Yeah.
I think he's great. And I was worried about it when it came out, because I thought, well, Chris Pratt, you know, the year after Guardians of the Galaxy, is the worst bit of stunt casting ever. I thought, this is going to be awful. But I thought, this is genuinely going to fall completely flat. And it really didn't. He was genuinely really good in it. I would really recommend it, I mean, if you haven't seen it.
No, I haven't, no.
Give it a watch. It's less than 2 hours, I think.
Mm. It was surprisingly short, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Everyone expected like a 2 hour, 10 minute, 2 hour, 20 minute kind of movie.
But yeah, it's fun. It keeps its pace up. There's no slog in the middle. There's no boring bit. It's all fun all the way through. Matt Bomer's in it.
Yeah.
For about 10 minutes.
Yeah.
He gets the Drew Barrymore treatment.
Ah, okay.
Yeah, which is a shame. Because I quite like Matt Bowman. When I saw him on the cut, I was like, oh, yeah, okay. But what's quite hilarious is, and it is a spoiler for the first 10 minutes, but they kill him off at the beginning, and then his name is in the titles. Which just made me laugh.
Yeah.
Like, oh, you're just taking the piss now. Yeah. Poor guy, isn't he going, you've done that to me, you bastards. But yeah, really, really good. Fun little Western outside of, you know, Logan, probably one of the best Westerns to come out the last couple of years. Really,
well,
we've had
some really good Westerns.
Yeah, but Hell or High Water.
Which I still haven't
seen. Yeah, that's a great film. I saw that the other week. Very good.
I've heard. I really want to watch
very
it.
Very good film.
I haven't got around to renting it yet. I think I'm waiting for Netflix to get
it's on Prime.
Is it?
It is on Prime. No, yeah, Amazon Prime.
I will nick my brother's Amazon Prime.
Bone Tomahawk, which you put me onto, actually. Which
amazing movie.
I loved that to bits.
My favourite film of...
But the thing,
brilliant.
So you look at, like, Magnificent Seven. Of the ones we've named, Magnificent Seven, Hell or High Water, I would class Logan as a Western.
Yeah.
Bone Tomahawk.
Yeah.
Of those, the only ones that are actually a traditional Western is Magnificent Seven.
Yeah.
The rest of them are Westerns, no doubt about it. But...
We did this
template.
We mentioned this earlier because I wrote my thesis on conventions of Western genre. So everyone get into it, but yeah, I think you're right, because the Western typically is set on the American frontier.
Yeah.
1845 to 1892, I think.
Yeah.
Anything around that is Western themed, but it's not a Western.
Yeah.
So, you know, you can have contemporary Westerns, revisionist Westerns, gay Westerns, whatever Westerns you like. But I think, yeah, you're right. Magnificent Seven's the only one of those that feels like a... If you think peak Westerns, 40s through to the mid-50s.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what it's going for. It's not trying to be revisionist about the genre. It's not trying to...
No, it falls into the list like the ones I mentioned earlier. It's like Unforgiven and Tombstone and those... classic Westerns, and they are, you know, they are classic Westerns. Mm. They're the ones that, if you said to somebody, give me a Western, they would go the Magnificent Seven, new or old. They'd go Unforgiven, they'd go Tombstone, the Spaghetti Western Trilogy, Josie Wales, any of those.
Yeah.
But yeah, Magnificent Seven, of all the Westerns we've had the last couple of years, that's the only one that's a traditional Western that is also good.
Yeah.
Because it's about the closing of the West, basically, isn't it? It's about the guys who have come together to do a thing, but actually they're not necessarily really supposed to be there anymore.
No.
They have to come back. They were done with, but we still need them.
Brilliant. Well, I'm definitely going to watch that thing, because it's on Netflix, so I'm going to check it out. Yeah, I'm gonna check it out soon. My choice is probably on Netflix, because it always seems to be.
Okay.
Mine is the fourth film in the Mission Impossible franchise, Ghost Protocol.
No, it's not on any VOD anywhere in the country.
Really?
Really.
It always seemed to be.
I have watched, because after The Mummy, I wanted to watch Mission Impossible, and I watched 1, 2, 3, and 5 that are on Sky Cinema.
Oh, my God.
4 is nowhere to be
found. What's that about?
I have no idea.
That's weird. I mean, I think...
Which really annoyed me, because it's actually one of the best.
It's really good. Obviously Mission Impossible is about Tom Cruise's Ethan Hunt putting a band together to go and do a spy thing.
Yeah.
Now, I think Mission Impossible franchise is really, really underrated. I think apart from number 2, which is a bit dodgy, right?
That's my favourite one, John Woo.
Number 2 is a John Woo film.
Yeah.
It's not a Mission Impossible
film. It's a John Woo trying to do James Bond film. It's not a Mission Impossible film. Right, not really. There are things I do like about that film, to be fair. There are. Like Anthony Hopkins turning up on his holidays, just going, I play a part. But like, I think the rest are proper, really good Mission Impossible. And they're all by different people. I mean, number 6 next year is going to be the first one that's by the same director twice in a row, Chris McQuarrie. But I think this one by Brad Bird.
Yeah. He's the guy that made The Incredibles.
The guy that made The Incredibles,
And The Iron Giant.
And The Iron Giant. And then after this, he did Tomorrowland, which was. It's just the whole franchise I really like, but I picked Ghost Protocol because I think it's got one of the most interesting team lineups, because it brings in Jeremy Renner as Brant, who I think for a time they were queuing up as a possible Tom Cruise replacement, and then they realised A, Tom Cruise never wants to give up anything ever, and B, Jeremy Renner's alright,
but I didn't really do it with Bourne.
I think that's the thing. I think they got him in there when he'd done okay. I think personally he'd done okay with Bourne. I liked him in Bourne, but
he needs to give him
his own thing.
Yeah.
So actually, giving him Mission Impossible when, because let's be honest about it, Ethan Hunt is not the original character from Mission Impossible.
No, it's Jim Phelps. It's
Jim Phelps, who was A, the bad guy, and B, killed off.
Yeah,
number one.
Yeah, yeah.
So they then went to Jeremy Renner and went, let's do this, let's squeeze him in. And Tom Cruise went, well, no, because I can still run like a Kenyan on speed. I am absolutely going to still be doing
this. Is my franchise. Plus the fact that Jeremy Renner, you're right, he does need his own, something new. He's been ill-served by, in a way, but I mean, Bourne Legacy.
Yeah.
He didn't, it's the whole thing of he was in the shadow of Matt Damon anyway, and he was ill-served by some of the elements of it. It wasn't really his fault.
Yeah, it was. That was my favourite of the Bourne films as well, because I'm not really hugely into the originals. They're good, but
I'm a big fan of the originals. Even the fifth, fourth.
Oh, I loved the new one. You want to call
it.
That was great.
I know a lot of people that went, oh, that's just shit. I adored it.
Yeah, it was really good.
Apart from some of the tech stuff at the beginning, which really wound me up. Don't be an IT guy and watch films.
Yeah, important note, everyone. Jeremy Renner coming in, and you've got Simon Pegg as well coming back from the third one, which he was really good. You've got Paula Patton coming in as the woman, not as good as Rebecca Ferguson in Rogue Nation, the next film, but I quite liked her dynamic. I just think it was good, and it's got a lot of good elements to it, like, you know, the Burj Al Arab whole thing of Tom Cruise trying to climb the skyscraper, leaping off, and all this kind of thing. It's got a very good, yeah, I know.
My stomach going just watching that.
It's got a really good car chase in like a sandstorm, which is really clever. There's some good inventive sequences in it, and I think it's just well put together. It was the first one as well that truly embraced the whole idea of kind of being a bit like the TV show in having missions, having proper established missions. Three did it to an extent, but that had the love story running through it more so. It was Alias the movie.
Was Three one with Philip Seymour Hoffman?
Michelle Monaghan.
I really like that. Michelle Monaghan and Philip Seymour Hoffman is a really good villain, but it was more the love story really than the missions.
Biggest problem was the name of its doohickey. Yeah.
The rabbit's foot.
Yeah. Where's the rabbit's foot? You could get any two words and put them together and it would be better than rabbit's foot.
They might as well have just called it the MacGuffin, mightn't they?
Yeah, exactly.
But no, Ghost Protocol, it's not my favourite Mission Impossible film, but then I think it's either number one or number five that's my favourite. But then I like all of them in their own way, except two. Except most
two's
of them.
Still what the thing with two,
but
two
yeah,
is still watchable.
I'll still watch it.
I don't sit there and go, this is fucking dog shit. Why am I watching this?
Yeah, I'd watch it.
I go through and go, okay, well at least now I can go on to number three.
Get some
J.J. Abrams goodness.
I've watched them in a row because I've never watched them before. And I was like, yeah, I like the second one best, I think, because it's just stupid. And I think that's what I like about it.
I have a real soft spot for daft spy shit.
Yeah, exactly.
It's why I love Alias. It's why I love Blacklist. It's why I like Bourne. It's why, you know. And to a point is why I'm not really that big a Bond fan. It's not stupid enough for me.
The old Bond films are.
The new ones are so far up their own arses.
Spectre was a bit more like that though. Spectre was a bit more daft.
It was more Bondy.
Yeah, it was more daft.
Yeah.
And
I'm not taking anything away from.
No.
They're still watchable.
Yeah.
If I had a choice, I would probably watch Bourne and Mission Impossible first.
And so I'm looking forward to number six because that's bringing back even more of the band. I think
Michelle Monaghan's coming back for that.
Michelle Monaghan's back for that one. You'll have Ving Rhames back, and he only crops up briefly in
the only name you need to tell me is coming back to get me on board is John Woo.
Unless he's in it as a character.
Yeah, what'll happen is Tom Cruise will take his mask off and it'll be John Woo underneath.
But it's John Woo.
Tom Cruise will take his mask off, it'll actually be a slow-mo dub.
That's mine. Mission Impossible Ghost Protocol. I mean, what's your third choice?
I've gone for Desperado. Robert Rodriguez, 1995.
Nice choice.
Yes. So, mainly because there's one very short scene in it, which is the thing that I think is about getting the band back together in more ways than one. So it's first of all, you need to know that Desperado, for those who don't know, I'm sure we do, is a sequel to El Mariachi.
El Mariachi, yeah.
Yeah.
Which is, so Desperado, we were talking about westerns actually. It's kind of, it's kind of a contemporary western,
yep.
say in Mexico.
Yeah, I'd call Desperado a western.
Yeah. Yep. So the mariachi here, the girlfriend's killed,
mm-hmm.
and his hand is injured, so he can't play guitar anymore. At the end of Mariachi, our mariachi, I think,
yep.
comes back in Desperado, and gets embroiled in a drug-related gang warfare in his little town, as well as getting vengeance for what happened to him and his girlfriend. It's kind of a continuation of the story. So, bearing in mind it's a continuation, what you may, or people may not necessarily have realised when watching Desperado, so the guy, Carlos Gallardo, who's the mariachi in El Mariachi, mm-hmm. he is replaced by Antonio Banderas for Desperado, because the studio obviously needed a big name
yeah.
at the time. Antonio Banderas was getting to be
yeah.
a really big,
yeah.
big star.
And he's a big fucking Mexican dude.
And he's a big fucking Mexican
yeah.
dude.
That helps.
Yeah.
yeah.
What you may not know is Carlos Gallardo is in Desperado.
Yes, he is.
okay, right.
He returns in Desperado. So the scene that I was referring to earlier, one of the coolest scenes in the film, is a gunfight. Two guys carrying guitar cases. One of them's guitar case is a rocket launcher. One
Wonderful.
Of them is two machine guns inside the guitar
yeah.
case. That is Carlos Gallardo.
Yeah.
He is back and brought into it with a really like brilliant like nod and wink to because Robert Rodriguez obviously probably.
I think they're related. I think he's related.
Yeah, there's some
they're
relation
cousins
between
or something.
Them. Yeah.
Because I think he's related to Danny Trejo as well, who's also in it.
Because Danny Trejo is also
yeah.
in it. Salma Hayek is also
yeah.
in it. It's got
yeah.
it's got a great cast, actually, Desperado. But it's just like a cool as fuck movie.
Oh, yeah.
And the coolest of fucking scenes in it is with Carlos Gallardo, where he's got the machine guns. And they're just in the middle of a... I don't think he even says anything in Desperado.
No, he doesn't.
He hasn't got a single line of dialogue.
He just nods at...
But he nods.
At our mariachi and then...
And they're in a... Yeah,
they're in a gunfight.
Yeah. And it's not
cool.
even like... I'm not even talking like he whips out a Tommy gun out of a guitar case or anything.
Yeah.
The guitar cases are the guns. It's... They go back to back at one point and they're
yeah.
shooting the people in the... you know, the gang who are locked away in their...
armoured
car
limo.
With a... massive mounted machine gun on the top of it like a tank. Fucking brilliant scene. But it is actually probably the only one of the three films that I've chosen, which is literally about getting a band back together because Carlos Gallardo is a mariachi.
Yeah. Well, they all play together at the beginning of...
And they're all playing together right at the beginning. So it's literally a band getting back together.
Very good.
And reuniting the cast with the director.
Very good. Multiple meanings, I mean. Excellent.
There you go.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hey, babe, Brooker, did you go for Desperado?
I didn't go
oh,
for Desperado,
okay.
no. It's a good choice, though. I recently rewatched Desperado. I think after you spoke about it on the podcast,
yeah.
I went, I really want to watch
yeah,
that.
Yeah, it, yeah, it has that effect every time I talk about it.
I think I literally went, oh, what? Yeah, I don't. I bought it on Blu-ray specifically to watch it.
Yep.
It looks nice on Blu-ray as well.
Oh, I bet it does.
I mean, it still looks like a grindhouse film, but it looks gorgeous. but no, my last choice is nowhere near as meta. and I chose Reservoir Dogs.
Oh, nice.
Literally was my... It was going to be my fourth choice in case there was some crossover and then the whole thing with Usual Suspects happened. So it's my third choice.
Yeah.
So yeah, again, the Usual Suspects. Well, 1992, Quentin Tarantino's debut movie.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And another one. See, this seems to happen a lot. I keep picking films that they just don't age.
Yeah.
They don't
yeah,
age
yeah,
at all. You
yeah.
Because again, it's just, there's no special effects. It's
no.
all dialogue. There's hardly any, for a film that's about a bunch of guys doing a heist, not actually that much action in it either. Like, even the heist section in this film only lasts about 5 minutes
yeah.
and that's it.
Yeah.
yeah.
It's all talking, which is what Tarantino was good at, is good at,
mm-hmm.
And got famous doing. Yeah, so starts around sitting around a table talking about Madonna songs and literally he had a guy reading names out of a book. He had a guy literally reading a phone book and it was interesting
yeah.
and funny.
Yeah.
Only Tarantino could do that. And I've lost a lot of respect for Tarantino the last couple of years. But that film...
Well, yeah, because we were talking about westerns.
Yeah.
So you didn't enjoy Hateful Eight or Django?
I hated the Hateful Eight.
Yeah?
Really?
I need to watch it again.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a three-hour film. I don't want to give a three-hour film a second chance until I really got it. I just didn't like it. I didn't get on with it at all. And Django I liked for Leonardo DiCaprio. Mm.
Oh, I love Django.
Everything
in Pulp Fiction.
Django is good.
Everything
yeah.
about Django Unchained, I don't know, it just irked me. I love Christoph Waltz. I think he's amazing. But he's amazing in everything that isn't Green Hornet.
Yeah.
But I don't know, there's just something about Django I didn't like.
Would you have preferred it with Will Smith instead of Jamie Foxx?
Probably. Yeah. I don't think Jamie Foxx fit the part at all.
Oh, well, that's a shame. I like Jamie Foxx. Did you go to the Baby Driver preview, did you?
No. I was sadly recording a character unlock and so I sent my wife to watch it.
Yeah.
Who came back and just rubbed it in my... I said, I can't wait to watch this, it's going to be good. And she's like, no, it looks shit. I was like, no, it's good. And suddenly I'm like, oh, I can't go. Why don't you go?
Yeah.
I've got two tickets, this bloody thing. Just take the tickets and go and watch it. And she came back and it was awesome. I was like, oh, thanks. Just fucking rub it in.
It is awesome.
But again, Wednesday, Thursday, it comes out this week and the times are shite. So I don't know when I'm going to get time to watch it. But I am looking forward to watching it. But no, I don't like Jamie Foxx. Did you see Sleepless?
No.
That was awful.
Really?
Like, it was a TV movie that they surgically added Jamie Foxx to just to put it into a cinema. It was garbage. But Reservoir Dogs does not have Jamie Foxx in it. It's all the better for it. But yeah, so you've got, you know, Harvey Keitel, Steve Buscemi, Tim Roth,
Michael Madsen.
Yeah. Just this like sea of awesomeness.
Yeah.
And just dark comedy from start to finish. It is laugh out loud funny.
Yeah.
Whether or not it's supposed to be laugh out loud funny. But
well, it's the torture scene, isn't it? You can gauge someone's appreciation of film, I think, from the torture scene.
Yeah.
See, I find that really funny.
Yeah.
Like Michael Madsen dancing around to Stuck in the Middle with You.
Yeah.
While he's torturing a dude is just beyond reprehensible, but it's so funny.
Yeah.
But yeah, Reservoir Dogs, I mean, you don't need to say anything about Reservoir Dogs. It's five guys that have been brought together. And just them being brought together as well, that scene where they're all in the room, the first time they're all in the room together.
Brilliant, that is.
Comedy gold.
Yeah.
Great choice as well, because you refused to tip earlier, Brooker, you rude man.
Yeah.
No.
No. That's it.
That's
all right. But yeah, awesome film.
Brilliant. Great choice. My one is a little bit more highbrow, quite honestly. It's probably the best film that we've talked about today.
Yeah.
And mine is The Expendables 2.
Yes, I'm glad you said 2. When you said Expendables,
I did come very close to saying The Expendables 2 and The Expendables 3.
Yeah. Well, Banderas, of course.
Well, yeah, see, Banderas.
Come on, Expendables 2 is the best one, by far.
Jean Villaine.
Jean-Claude Van Damme. Number one, Expendables, obviously, Sylvester Stallone bringing together a bunch of expendable mercenaries who are played by all of the most legendary sort of action stars almost of the last, 30 years.
Yeah.
And the first Expendables...
And Randy Couture.
The first Expendables kind of forgot that it was supposed to be quite fun and ridiculous, and it was trying to be a bit of a drama.
Yeah, it was.
For quite a lot of it.
I have to admit, I didn't see that with The Expendables. I sat there with a massive, stupid grin on my face the entire way through.
But it does a lot of, talky bits, and I'm like, I don't want this. Just give me,
a bunch of
90s...
bros high-fiving all the way through.
I think when it was announced, everyone was like, fucking, no, it's 20 years too late.
Yeah.
But Arnie Stallone in a film together, bringing in Statham.
Yeah.
You know... Who's Stone Cold Steve Austin was going to
be
blending of the new with the old.
Yeah,
perfect.
Brilliant.
But that's actually where my problem with two comes in.
Okay.
So with one, you get this thing where you have Steve Austin, a professional wrestler, and then I know he's a WWE wrestler, but he's actually a trained, proper professional wrestler, versus Randy Couture, who is also a proper professional wrestler, was one of my favourite scenes ever. It's like when you watch The Lost Kingdom or The Forbidden Kingdom, and it's Jackie Chan v. Jet Li. Like, this is going to be fucking awesome.
Yeah.
I really, really wanted Jet Li versus Van Damme in number two.
That
really
would have been good. That would
because the only other person that can go up against Van Damme for me in that film would have been Dolph Lundgren.
But is
from Universal Soldier.
Yeah, that would have been good as well. Is this the one where Jet Li goes out of it after 10 minutes?
Yes.
Or is that number three? I think Jet Li's not in this one, which is he sort of leaves at the beginning.
Yeah.
So they can get Chuck Norris in. Chuck Norris!
Chuck Norris jokes.
Yeah. He's only in it for 5 minutes, but it's an amazing 5 minutes. It's like the same kind of 5 minutes where you've got Bruce Willis, Arnold Schwarzenegger, Sylvester Stallone, just with machine guns, just going. This one only loses points because it doesn't have that amazing Dolph Lundgren moment, which I think is in the first one, where he walks into the office of the bad guy, sees a big stuffed animal on the wall, and goes, "Nice bird," and carries on like normal.
But two does have "I now pronounce you man and knife."
Yeah.
So, I mean,
I now pronounce and yeah. Statham's called Lee Christmas.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just...
All the names are ridiculous.
It's beautiful.
It's yin yang. Yeah.
Jean Villain, as we've said.
Terry Crews' Hail Caesar.
And what's Arnie called? What's his name? It's like something like Dutch, isn't it? But like it's...
I can't remember
either.
Bruce Willis is Mr. Church, isn't he?
Yeah, Mr. Church. Yeah. But obviously Bruce Willis decided to get all diva and he's not in the third one after that.
No, well, they dropped him for Harrison Ford.
Yeah.
Which is a smart
Harrison Ford and Kelsey Grammer, I think, still were the worst bits of three. I really enjoyed three.
Kelsey Grammer worked surprisingly well, I thought.
I thought it was okay.
Three was good, but the problem was they spent too much time on Luke Hemsworth or whatever and all those young ones.
Yeah.
Who gives a shit? We're there for Harrison, Arnie.
Nobody needs to give Ronda Rousey any more acting work. That chick cannot act at all.
Although they were talking about the Expendables, aren't they? Which I think they've kind of
put the mockers on that, haven't they? And they were talking about Expendables 4 with Brosnan coming into it and a few others.
Well, Stallone's just walked from that, hasn't he?
Yeah, so that's probably not going to happen.
Was it just? It's about 3 months ago.
Well, but no, 2, I love 2. And it's a fun... I need to do the trilogy again because I remember when they came out, I would go with all of my bloke mates and we'd make a thing of it.
Yeah. That's how I started my challenge this year. A minute past 12 on the 1st of January, I watched The Expendables.
Really?
And then that night, I watched 2 and 3.
Yeah.
Oh, excellent. Good choice. But yeah,
2 is Simon West, isn't it?
Simon West. It's just fun. I mean, it's just... It gets what it's supposed to be. You spot on.
Yeah.
Ridiculous fun.
Yeah.
Over-the-top scenes. Ripe, hilariously ripe dialogue. Legends across the board. And, you know, it's just got some iconic moments.
Yeah.
I love it. So, yeah, that's my last... Good triple bill, guys. Thanks, Steve. Where is he, anyway? Have you seen him?
No, last I heard, he's just gone to the bar. I think there's a big queue.
Yeah. He's escaped the rugby guys, anyway. He should be here by the end, really. But before we go, we've got some recommendations, haven't we, for the... not the week ahead, but
at some point.
Whenever.
Yeah.
So
pretty much everything we said, which apart from Mission Impossible 4, is all on VOD.
Yeah, pretty much.
Well, I was going to ask about your long lists, if you had anything else, because I had Expendables 2 down on mine, Magnificent 7 as well.
We'll do that first. I had The Italian Job, the first one, and Inception, which is that was almost my third choice, actually.
Yeah. I mean, I had the Expendables trilogy was the backup, and I did have Ocean's 11 as well, just because it was Ocean's 11.
Yeah. Well, Steve's was Ocean's 11 and Avengers.
Avengers is a good one. Yeah.
I also had Predator.
Yeah.
Dylan, you son of a bitch.
Yeah.
Dylan! Yeah. So my best friend and I always greet each other with that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Dylan, you son of a bitch!
nothing against you, but I bet it's not as impressive.
Probably not, no.
I don't know, we haven't seen Dylan yet.
I also thought about The World's End, the Simon Pegg one. Because it's about the band getting back
together. It's just a bit of a shit film,
isn't it? It's just not great compared to some of the others. Commando.
Yes.
But the band is obviously the enemies.
Yeah.
Getting
back together to take on Matrix.
True.
And T2 Trainspotting, which Brooker could cover his ears for.
No, you can talk about
it all you want. Well, I haven't seen it either.
You haven't seen it either? No. Okay, that's...
I'm just not going to, that's the difference.
Okay. Yeah.
If we were going to do a reverse of this triple bill, I was going to think about High Noon. Because it's the opposite, isn't it? He can't get the band together. Yeah. It won't come together to help him.
That's a complicated one we should do another time. Yeah.
Refusing to get the band back together.
Yeah, films where you can't get the band back together.
Bit niche.
A little bit.
Yeah.
Sound, okay. So, let's do recommendations then. Brooker, you go first. What are you going to recommend this week?
So my one is one I haven't seen yet, but I am desperate to see, and now it's on Netflix, I will be able to watch it. It's the horror anthology film All Made by Women, which is XX.
Oh, yeah, I want to see this.
I mean, the only one I can name, I'm talking about Karen Kusama made one of the films.
Yeah.
She made Jennifer's Body.
Yeah.
Which is not as shit as everybody makes out. It just would be better if it wasn't Megan Fox.
We'd apply that to everything, really, wouldn't we?
Yeah.
True.
Yeah.
Megan Fox would be better if she wasn't quite so Megan Fox.
It's true. Owen, what about you?
Well, I'm also thinking something I haven't seen either, which is Glow, which has just been added to Netflix, which I'm quite interested to see how
What's that
is.
About, that one?
So it's about it's set in 1980s in LA, about a group of women who decide to become wrestlers.
Wrestlers. Wow.
Alison Brie is in it.
Excellent.
I skimmed an article about it. I didn't want to read too much about it. I skimmed an article which said she was fantastic. It said she was, like, brilliant. Kind of returned to form for Alison Brie after Community.
Brilliant. Is this a film or a TV show?
TV series. Netflix original series.
Cool.
It's just they're like 22-minute episodes as well, aren't they? Or half-hour episodes.
Yeah, it's not long. It's like a sitcom. Yeah. Yeah.
Is it actually a Netflix original, though? Or is it something else that they just put Netflix original on? Because they're crafty with this. Yeah. Have you noticed?
Well, I think... I'm pretty sure it's Netflix.
It's Netflix original as opposed to Netflix exclusive.
Yeah, Mark Maron's in it as well, I've just seen.
Oh, okay. From WTF.
Yes.
Yeah.
And whatever his show was that he did, the sitcom that he did, it was like Louis.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Sound? Good Maron, stuff. Okay. I'm going for a film I have seen. It's just craziness for me. I know, yeah. I'm going for Don't Breathe, the tense home invasion horror thriller by Fede Alvarez, who directed the Evil Dead remake.
Yeah.
Watched this the other day. Really, really good.
It's great, isn't it?
Yeah. Tight, compact, full of social commentary underneath all the, you know, the quite brutal sort of brooding violence in it. Stephen Lang is fucking terrifying as a blind man.
Have you seen that?
I have, I loved it.
Really good. Really, really good. And it's only like 85 minutes, but there are moments where you will be like holding your breath.
I went to cinema, so I took the wife to see it, because we both really wanted to watch it. And because it was like date night, so we had drinks and popcorn and shit. But we large popcorn, and I refused to eat it because it was making too much noise. It was really terrifying.
Because sound is a big part of it. You know, the absence of sound, especially, plays a big part.
When they're in the basement, and it's pitch black.
Oh, that's so well done.
But the
twist was grim.
That moment at the end is.
Anyone that tells you they saw that coming is a fucking liar.
So to speak.
Yeah. So horrible.
It's grim, isn't it? It's making part of the point, really, of the whole thing about parenthood, childhood, austerity, and all this stuff. It's really good.
No blood in it.
Yeah, that's true. Doesn't need it.
Oh yeah, of course.
No blood in it, which doesn't is really good. I remember reading Fede Alvarez, because obviously he made the Evil Dead remake, which has it raining blood at one point. You know, gallons and gallons and gallons of blood in this film, and he basically wanted to go the polar opposite make a deeply atmospheric film, which I think he succeeded with really well.
He nailed. Definitely one of the best home invasion thrillers of recent memory. Cracking film on Netflix.
On
Sky Cinema. Now TV. So absolutely check that one out. That's the end of the show this week. Still no sign of Steve.
No, he's just walked in.
Oh, Steve.
Hello, Steve.
Failed Critics Podcast is presented by Steve Norman and Owen Hughes, with contributions from different guests every week, with original music provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com from the track The Bandit, remixed by James Yule, who you can find at jamesyule.com. You can find us on Facebook and Twitter at Failed Critics, on iTunes and all good podcast apps, or you can check us out at failedcritics.com. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe to the podcast on iTunes and leave a rating or a review. And why not check out our sister podcasts, Character Unlocked and Field & Mullinger's Underground Nights, from the Failed Media Network of podcasts. Thanks for listening.
The new one, is, I thought, outstanding. So obviously this is a...
Steve's got caught up in a riot.
Steve is in the pub, but
Steve's in the middle of a bar fight.
He can't get through the rug of this.
He's on the verge of joining them, so that's that noise you hear is Steve. Maybe he'll show up. We should carry on anyway.
Good luck editing that.
We'll wait until they shut up a minute, I think.
Yeah. There we are. Oh no.
So
right. So
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.